Welcome and thank you for joining us for another episode of KPMG's Inside International Tax, a podcast devoted to recent developments, observations, and trends related to U.S. international tax. I'm your host, Gary Scanlon, a principal in KPMG's WNT International Tax Practice. We're recording live here from Lake House, KPMG's wonderful training facility in Orlando. My co-host, Kristen Gamboa, is here with me, but today she's in the hot seat. She's one of our guest interviewees. Kristen, hopefully you're ready to switch roles today.
Hey, Gary. I'm excited for this one.
As you should be. So on November 29th, 2024, Treasury and the IRS released proposed regs addressing previously taxed earnings and profits, or what we fondly call PTEP, of foreign corporations and related basis adjustments. These regulations come nearly 6 years after a 2019 PTEP notice, which announced the government's intent to issue PTEP regs under sections 959 and 961 to reflect changes from the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, and almost 7 years since the TCJA was enacted. So this has been a long time coming. For our discussion today, in addition to Kristen, we're joined in person by Gloria LaBerge, a senior manager in KPMG's WNT International Tax Group. Hi, Gloria.
Hey, Gary.
Are you happy to be here?
I'm so excited.
Oh, we're excited to have you. And we're also talking to Tim Chan, a partner in KPMG's WNT BTS Pass-Throughs Tax Practice, who's with us for the first time. Unfortunately, he couldn't join us here in sunny Orlando, so we'll just have to patch him in. Before we dive into the contents of the proposed regs, let's lay the foundation of what PTEP is and how the statutory scheme is intended to function. As many of our listeners know, PTEP refers to the earnings of a CFC that have already been included in the gross income of a 10% U.S. shareholder, typically as subpart F or guilty. Once such amounts have been included in gross income, sections 959 and 961 work in tandem to prevent double taxation as well as double non-taxation. Section 959 excludes distributions of PTEP from it being included again in gross income, including distributions through tiers of CFCs. Meanwhile, to ensure that non-economic gain or loss isn't recognized on the disposition of CFC stock, Section 961 increases CFC stock basis for an inclusion and then decreases the basis when the PTEP is distributed. If that basis reduction is in excess of the U.S. shareholder's basis in CFC stock, Section 961B2 requires gain recognition. These rules, which are found in Sections 961A and B, only apply to stock and interests, including partnership interests, owned directly by the U.S. shareholder. Section 961C gives the IRS authority to apply similar basis adjustments to lower-tier CFC stock owned by an upper-tier CFC, but according to the statute, only for purposes of determining the amount of a subpart F inclusion. The proposed regs are the government's first attempt at issuing regs under 961C. There have been open questions related to PTEP since the dawn of time, or at least since the dawn of me. But the TCJA ushered in the mandatory repatriation tax under 965, as well as GILTI, both of which have increased the sheer amount of PTEP in the system, and thus the significance of these open questions to taxpayers. It's hard to believe that the TCJA was enacted over 7 years ago, while I was still young, when I still had hopes and dreams and hair. So it's hard to argue these rules are timely. They are also, to be fair, not comprehensive. While the proposed regs offer substantial guidance and helpful guidance, they still don't cover everything. Indeed, Treasury has indicated that this is just the first batch of guidance. Future installments will address transactional elements of the PTEP rules, including the rules previously outlined in a 2024 notice applicable to inbound transactions. The proposed regs were big news, Kristen, but when are these regulations proposed to be applicable, and until they're finalized, can taxpayers even rely on them?
So in general, the proposed regs are prospective, so that means they're only applicable once they're finalized. There are some exceptions to this. Certain provisions within the proposed regs, generally those that were announced in Notice 2019-01 that you mentioned, are retroactive back to the date of the notice, so back to 2018, once the regs are final. The regs also include this early application election, which taxpayers can make once the regs go final to apply the regs 2 years before finalization. There's certain restrictions around making this election, so taxpayers are permitted to elect to apply the regs retroactively for any open year. However, once the taxpayer elects, they have to apply the regs for all succeeding years, so taxpayers can't flip-flop years on a go-forward basis once they decide to early adopt the regs. If you decide to apply the rules, then you have to apply them in their entirety, so taxpayers can't cherry-pick certain rules within the proposed regs. And then there's a consistency requirement. So you have to make the same election for all Section 267B related foreign corps. And then to make the election, you have to get written consent from all of your shareholders. So I think it's important to note that while the election is called the early application election in the proposed regs, taxpayers shouldn't confuse this with reliance. There is no reliance language in the preamble to the proposed regs. So not something that taxpayers can currently rely on, and this election can't actually be made until the regs go final.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point, and it's helpful to get to know these rules, and maybe if only to prepare yourself for the future or maybe provide comments to the government. But by the time you apply the early adoption election, you'll know what you are adopting, and it'll be a retroactive election effectively.
Yep.
So clearly there's a lot to unpack in this 332-page reg package, give or take. So let's just start at the beginning, Kristen. Could you give us the key takeaways from the proposed regulations under Section 959?
Sure, Gary. The proposed Section 959 regs generally follow the rules that were announced in the 2019 notice with a few modifications. We're not going to be able to get into all of that today, but I think a few things that our listeners should be aware of about the proposed Section 959 regs. So first, they provide for both shareholder-level tracking of PTEP as well as corporate-level tracking. So most taxpayers are generally doing this currently in some fashion, but maybe not to the level of detail or extent to which it would be required under the proposed regs. So this is something that taxpayers will have to comply with once the regs go final. I think the biggest takeaway in the 959 regs is that they would provide that PTEP is generally a shareholder level attribute. So what does that mean? That essentially means that PTEP is not attached to particular shares, and instead it's tracked at the individual shareholder level. Consistent with this view, the proposed regs would treat a consolidated group as a single covered shareholder. So the U.S. consolidated group would track the PTEP with respect to a CFC owned by a member of the consolidated group as an aggregate. And then one other notable change here on the Section 959 rules is with respect to the successor rules. So pre-TCJA, PTEP was obviously a desirable attribute, something that taxpayers wanted to have. Post-TCJA, however, PTEP is not necessarily as desirable. The fact that PTEP distributions are subject to the basis rules of Section 961 and the fact that we have the implementation as part of the TCJA of Section 245 Cap A, which generally permits taxpayers to claim a DRD with respect to distributions of untaxed E&P, results in untaxed E&P generally being a desirable attribute. Under current law, when you acquire a CFC with PTEP, under the current regs, the acquirer is not necessarily automatically a successor in interest to the PTEP. Instead, the regs require the U.S. acquirer to prove to the satisfaction of the commissioner, and the current regs also have no successor rules for how you determine when you're a successor with respect to indirect acquisitions. The proposed regs, however, would provide rules with respect to both of these points. So under the proposed regs, they would provide that a covered shareholder, so a U.S. person that acquires the stock, is automatically a successor in interest with respect to PTEP if it acquires that PTEP from another covered shareholder. And I think what's interesting to point out here is that a covered shareholder for this purpose includes an intervening foreign owner. So you can, even if you have intervening foreign ownership, you can still end up being a successor in interest to PTEP that was created prior to that foreign owner's ownership. So from a practical perspective, these successor in interest rules mean that once these regs go final, taxpayers that acquire foreign corporation stock are going to have to do diligence and get the relevant information anytime they do an acquisition.
Yeah, that's a really important point and another reason why you might want to make a 338G election. I mean, PTEP's not always bad. You can get foreign tax credits with respect to PTEP, but I think in general, it may not be as desirable as untaxed 245 Cap A E&P anymore. So this is an important aspect of these rules. So, Kristen, thanks for your overview on 959. Let's go to 961. Were there any notable changes or clarifications there?
Yeah, so the 961 regs have many notable changes, both with respect to comparing the proposed regs to current law, but also compared to the proposed 2006 regs that were issued. So I think the biggest takeaway here is that under the proposed regs, 961 basis is a share-by-share attribute. So that essentially means that 961 basis attaches to a particular share of stock. And I think that the reason why this is so important here is that, as I mentioned, PTEP itself is a shareholder-level attribute. And so we have PTEP as a shareholder-level attribute, but 961 basis be attaching to shares. So that can lead to situations where you have recognition of uneconomic gain if the PTEP is not distributed on shares to which your 961 basis was attached. And I think this issue, not only is it an issue in the context of single U.S. shareholder ownership, but in the consolidated context where you have one group PTEP account, but then your basis is still tracked by share. So definitely something that taxpayers will need to be aware of with respect to Section 961 here. And I think it's important to note that this approach differs from the approach that was taken in the 2006 proposed regs, which would have permitted basis sharing. So the government explains in the preamble that they were concerned with basis shifting and creating non-economic losses. But I think the problem here is that not permitting basis shifting in certain situations at all can result in the recognition of non-economic gains.
And recognition of non-economic gains and also creating non-economic unrealized losses with respect to stock. And I think it bears emphasizing this point. And the government has heard comments from taxpayers on a recent panel. I believe an IRS official indicated that they were thinking about allowing some kind of basis shifting to prevent these non-economic gains. So hopefully if and when these regs are finalized, there's some relief there. So thanks for that, Kristen. Under current regs, when there's a distribution of current year PTEP, it appears that the reduction to basis occurs at the time of distribution, but the increase in basis for the inclusion doesn't occur until the end of the tax year. So there's a concern that you could recognize gain as a result of a mid-year distribution of current E&P if you didn't otherwise have basis in the stock, recognize gain under 961B2. Recently, the IRS issued some administrative guidance indicating that there is an interpretation of the regs that does not result in that recognition of gain for mid-year distributions of PTEP. Do the proposed regs follow up on this guidance and provide relief?
Yeah, so the regs, in line with the guidance that you mentioned, Gary, would adopt timing rules for the basis increase and basis decrease, which would essentially allow taxpayers to take into account a current year basis increase before determining the amount of gain that would otherwise be recognized under Section 961. And I think this result is consistent with both the policy of Section 959 and 961 and prevents double taxation and is obviously welcome guidance.
So as I said before, regs have never been issued under 961C. Let's talk about 961C basis. Adjusted basis under 961A, that is with respect to stock or partnership interest owned directly by the U.S. shareholder, appears to be no different than regular tax basis, but it's often said that 961C basis is limited purpose basis. Can you explain that?
By statute, Section 961C basis only applies for purposes of determining the amount of subpart of income. So this means, for example, it wouldn't apply for other purposes, such as for purposes of determining the E&P. Post-TCJA, with the enactment of the GILTI regime, there's been uncertainty as to whether the Section 961C basis applies for purposes of determining tested income or tested loss. And here, the proposed regs would affirmatively answer that question, providing that it applies for GILTI purposes as well. So this is obviously helpful and consistent with the approach that many taxpayers are currently taking.
That is helpful, Kristen. So the Treasury and the IRS have articulated a concern that extending Section 961C basis to the computation of tested income could create untaxed E&P, which itself could facilitate tax-free dispositions of CFC stock. Could you elaborate on this concern? How would the proposed regs address this?
Yeah, so the proposed regs here would introduce this concept of Section 961C PTEP. So while the proposed regs would make it clear that Section 961C basis counts for subpart F and tested income purposes, like I said, it doesn't apply for E&P. So a disposition, for example, of lower tier CFC stock could otherwise create untaxed E&P. And I think the concern that the government has here is that absent some rule, the creation of this E&P can be used, for example, to recharacterize a subsequent sale of an upper tier CFC as a 1248 dividend, which could be eligible for a 245 cap A DRD. And so that would in effect give taxpayers a double benefit. So to fix this problem, the proposed regs would provide that the E&P that's created as a result of the Section 961C basis would become 961C PTEP, effectively disallowing taxpayers from utilizing that untaxed E&P again to shelter gain on the sale of upper tier stock.
Okay, so the takeaway is that 961C basis can be used to reduce tested income on the disposition of a lower tier CFC stock, but it's going to create, you know, 961C PTEP that when distributed reduces stock, so you don't get the double benefit that the IRS and Treasury were concerned about. What else can you tell us about Section 961C, Kristen?
So under Section 961C, one of the longstanding issues here is whether taxpayers can recognize gain under Section 961C. And that's because Section 961C provides that adjustments similar to those in Section 961A and B apply essentially at the lower tier level. And so historically, taxpayers may have taken the position that because the language in Section 961C only provides for similar adjustments, and that, you know, arguably gain is not an adjustment, taxpayers may have taken the position that there's no gain recognition under Section 961C. Here, however, the proposed regs would take a different view, and the proposed regs would tell us that gain is, in fact, recognized under Section 961C to the extent that a distribution exceeds a taxpayer's basis in lower tier stock. However, the proposed regs would provide mechanical rules to prevent the acceleration of gain recognition. So they would do that here through the introduction of negative Section 961C basis. And so in effect, big picture, what this negative 961C basis concept would do is it would allow you, to the extent you don't have sufficient 961C basis in a share of lower tier stock, to drive your 961C basis negative to the extent you have adjusted basis in the stock.
I think the point here, the takeaway, negative 961C basis is kind of a weird concept, but I think what they're just saying is you can recover 961C basis, and then you can effectively recover your real basis before gain is recognized. But then once you've gotten over your real basis, you can't go negative on your 961C anymore, and then you have to recognize gain. And then the other thing to keep in mind is there's a deferral, but if you inbound that 961C basis, these proposed regs seem to cause a triggering event, which seems to me inconsistent with the 2024 notice And hopefully they take a different view when these regs are actually finalized. Thanks, Kristen.
Let's shift gears now and talk to Tim about some key partnership takeaways from the proposed regs. Unfortunately, Tim couldn't join us at the Lake House, so we'll talk remotely. Tim, can you tell us about how the new rules impact partnerships and their partners?
Yeah, sure. To really kind of understand some of the partnership changes in these proposed regulations, I think a lot of it has to do with the background of the aggregate versus entity approach. And so I'll kind of start with that first to kind of level set as I explain these rules. But ever since the enactment of the Subpart F inclusion rules, domestic partnerships generally have been treated as entities rather than as aggregates of their partners for purposes of determining whether a foreign corporation is a CFC. And historically, a similar entity view was taken for purposes of determining these Subpart F inclusions. So as a result, a domestic partnership that was a U.S. shareholder of a CFC historically would have had a CFC or Subpart F inclusion, and it would have allocated this inclusion along with the rest of its taxable incomes to its partners, regardless of whether or not its partners were U.S. shareholders. But under the TCJA, the view of whether or not the entity or aggregate approach was the better view kind of evolved when the GILTI rules were introduced, and the government ultimately decided on an aggregate view in 2019 when those final GILTI regulations were issued, and then they conformed the Subpart F and 956 inclusion rules with that in 2022. And to clarify, what I mean by an aggregate approach is that for purposes of determining that CFC inclusion, each partner is treated as proportionally owning an undivided interest in the CFC stock owned by the partnership. And so the focus of the question, at least for purposes of the inclusion, is on whether or not any direct or indirect partner is a U.S. shareholder of the partnership CFC.
Yeah, full disclosure, I was there at Treasury at the time, and part of the thought process was foreign partnerships were always treated as an aggregate. It didn't make much sense from a policy perspective to treat domestic partnerships any different than foreign partnerships, other than by reason of the statutory language. But anyways, Tim, that's a helpful background. Does this switch from entity to aggregate for domestic partnerships make it things any simpler?
Actually, I think an aggregate approach makes it actually, in my view, more complex for domestic partnerships. And first, as I mentioned, the partnership has to first determine whether or not it has a U.S. shareholder partner. So that's the voter value test in partnerships that can be kind of complicated in itself. But then as a second step, the partnership then has to determine that U.S. shareholders pro rata share of the CFC inclusion items. Now, the problem is there's not really much guidance on how to do that. And when you're dealing with partnerships that aren't just textbook straight up pro rata partnerships, they have variable economics like you do with fund partnerships where there's a hurdle or a carry. It's not an easy question. And the regulations describe that for purposes of these inclusions, generally the proportionate share is determined with reference to the person's interest in the income, but it doesn't really have any specific guidance for partnerships. And because the CFC inclusion going forward in an aggregate approach world is not going to be part of partnership taxable income, it may not make sense for the partnership to run that inclusion through the partnership allocation waterfall to make that determination. And as you kind of mentioned that since you've been at the Treasury, this question has been around for a long time. I think it's worth noting here that these proposed regs don't really attempt to address that question. Secondly, on top of that, because we're kind of moving from a world where we're going from entity to aggregate, because a partner going forward is gonna have the CFC inclusion and the PTET, these proposed regs have to deal with the past in a period where the partnership may have had prior CFC inclusions under the entity view. And so as part of these proposed regs, they would require the partnership as part of these transition rules to allocate that historic PTET to its partners based on a liquidation value on the date the regulations are in effect, or if earlier, they could potentially do earlier if they applied the early adoption option. Now, the problem with that is because partners, again, may have varying interest over the life of the partnership, and especially during the period where the partnership had the CFC inclusion, this kind of rough justice approach of using liquidation value, which looks at a snapshot in time, may not align which partners get that PTET tax attribute from the partnership with the partners that actually receive the allocation of the income. So that's kind of potentially a mismatch that it should be considered. But I also think that it's important to note that, you know, this PTET under the transition will be allocated to all partners. So all partners could have a share of the PTET, and it's going to be an administrative burden for both the partnerships and partners to track it. And further, like if you have a really small partner, that partner is going to get a share of the PTET. And even though like going forward, that partner may not be a U.S. shareholder partner, and they may not even understand the complexities of these rules. And so I think the transition rule will probably add some confusion for certain investors that otherwise wouldn't have to deal with these proposed regs.
Thanks, Tim. So how would the proposed regs make basis adjustments in light of this aggregate approach?
So the proposed regs address kind of an open issue of where the basis is credit for a U.S. shareholder partner that has an inclusion with respect to a partnership CFC. And where it's credited, there's a disparity that's created because when a U.S. shareholder partner has a subpart F inclusion with respect to the partnership CFC, under the statute, the partner increases its basis in its partnership interest by the amount of the inclusion. The partnership, however, doesn't have a subpart F inclusion because going forward under the aggregate approach again, it does not have the inclusion, so it doesn't have the basis increase in the CFC stock. And this creates an inside-outside basis disparity, what we commonly say in partnerships. And a problem could arise if the partnership sold the stock before the CFC made a distribution of that EMP and the partnership recognizes gain. And if the partnership doesn't get the basis, they might have an increased gain, and that gain would be allocated to the partners, including U.S. shareholder partners. And arguably, the U.S. shareholder partner's share of that gain represents its PTET in part and effectively results in the U.S. shareholder picking up the same income twice. Now, to address this problem in part, the proposed regs would create or increase what it calls derived basis to the U.S. shareholder partner that had the inclusion. And the derived basis is very similar to the 743B basis adjustment that you have in partnerships. And it's adjusted with respect to the partnership CFC stock and can be utilized by the partner when the partnership sells the CFC stock. But unlike with the 743 adjustment, where it's generally optional, if the partnership makes the 754 election, the derived basis concept under these proposed regs would be mandatory. So the partnership really has no choice but to deal with the administration. Not saying that the derived basis is a bad thing, but the partnership has no ability to opt out if it believes that the administrative burden outweighs the benefit.
There are a couple of things. First of all, this derived basis isn't just with respect to CFCs owned by domestic partnerships. It's also foreign partnerships, right? That's why it was an open issue even before the TCJA.
Yeah. It goes to derived basis and also if there's that kind of any intervening partnerships in between that you also get a basis increase for those intervening partnership interests.
But it's also limited because it's only with respect to CFCs and intervening partnerships directly or indirectly owned through other partnerships by the U.S. shareholder. So for instance, if the U.S. shareholder owns a CFC, which itself owns a partnership interest, and the partnership owns a CFC, these regs don't create derived basis at the lower partnership CFC level. So, I mean, these are limited. Treasury and the IRS in the preamble indicated that they are considering extending these rules, but they're really only at the U.S. shareholder level, either the partnership directly owned or indirectly owned through other partnerships.
Right.
So are there any other administrative complexities that are likely to arise from these proposed regs?
Yeah, so I think what will be challenging is the coordination of information between partners and partnerships, given that there's kind of a circular nature of the information sharing. On one hand, you have the partner that owns the CFC stock indirectly through the partnership. It will need information from that partnership to determine whether or not it has a CFC inclusion. And then on the other hand, the partnership will need to kind of wait on the partner to tell it that it had a CFC inclusion. So to bring that as an illustration, assume that you have a calendar year partner that has $100 of guilty tested income from a calendar year partnership A, but $80 of guilty tested losses from calendar year partnership B. That U.S. shareholder partner will not know whether or not it has a net guilty inclusion of $20 until it receives all of its information, and it doesn't have to make that determination until it has to file its own return, which could be a month after both partnerships' due dates. And so once the U.S. shareholder gets all the information, it has to tell partnership A, hey, I got this $20 inclusion, and then the partnership A has a derived basis on its return. But by then, partnership A's return may have already been due. So just trying to think about how all this will play out I don't really think the rules contemplate the timing of the information and the reporting in the real world situation. And I think especially with partnerships and tiered partnership situations, reporting can be a significant factor in whether the new rules are workable. I think there's some kind of analogous rules, like in the context of 743 or 1061, where reporting is either contingent or prompted by information from the partners. And those rules have various mechanisms to deal with the timing or absence of information. So I think while these rules are still proposed, I think it'd be helpful if that's something the government would consider in the final regs.
Great. Thanks, Tim.
So let's dive into the topic of FX gain and losses under Section 986 with our resident FX geek. Gloria, can you provide a quick refresher on 986C and what guidance was out there before these proposed regs were issued?
Yeah, of course, Gary. I'm always excited to talk about currency issues and I'm loving all the opportunity to do so lately. So we've heard a lot of great information on PTEP and know that that arises because CFC's income was subject to U.S. tax, and U.S. taxes are determined in the dollar. So obviously we have to translate CFC's income into the dollar, and that's generally done at the average rate for the taxable year. And while the U.S. person includes a specified amount, in dollar of income and pays tax on that, when they ultimately get the income or property or dollars, whatever, from the CFC, it might be something that's more or less than what they included in income. And so Section 986C is capturing that difference and treats that difference as ordinary gain or loss. Right now, we have a reg that specifically deals with 965 PTEP, but it doesn't have broad applicability. And so before these proposed regs were released, we had the statute. There was a notice from 1988. And then there were some regs related to other sections that we could look to for guidance. And then based on all of this, most taxpayers established some sort of reasonable approach on calculating and computing 986C gain or loss. But there were variances in how that was done, particularly with respect to how they would determine the basis for the PTEP that was distributed. Some taxpayers followed some notices and maintained annual layers of U.S. dollar basis, or following a different notice or a withdrawn proposed reg would pool the basis and bring out pro rata portions of that. And then there was also differences in how taxpayers would track PTEP and basis as it moved through tiers of CFCs. In particular, there was a question about when you would recognize 986C gain or loss if a PTEP was distributed from a non-dollar functional currency CFC to an upper tier CFC that used the dollar as their functional currency.
Thanks for that background, Gloria. How do the proposed regs address these open issues?
Well, the proposed regs tell us that we maintain the basis pools in annual layers as a default, but it also does provide for an election to pool. Either approach is kind of doable. You just have to make an election and be consistent. And then they provided specific guidance on how to adjust PTEP, basis, and tax accounts for distributions, including through tiers. And then they also interspersed a number of FX translation rules throughout the entire package. Of particular note were that these proposed regs made it crystal clear that you do not recognize 986C gain or loss until the PTEP returns to the U.S. and that the U.S. person would recognize that gain or loss. So to the extent there was any confusion about whether or not 986C gain or loss could be a CFC item, we got our answer. And then because prior to these regs, a U.S. shareholder might have recognized 986C gain or loss when PTEP went from a lower tier CFC to an upper tier CFC because that upper tier CFC was using the dollar. And they could have recognized it at that point, or they might have waited to recognize it until the top tier CFC made the distribution. And so taxpayers kind of had a choice at that point. But the proposed regs would eliminate that optionality once they're finalized.
Gloria, do the proposed regs provide for any other triggers for the recognition of FX gain or loss?
Yeah, it does. The proposed regs have two instances when you would recognize currency gain or loss on distributions of PTEP. The first is when there's actually a distribution to the U.S. shareholder. And then the second is when PTEP, quote unquote, ceases to be with respect to the covered shareholder, which obviously leads to the question of what does that even mean? What that means is when PTEP is no longer an attribute of the U.S. shareholder, you would recognize 96C gain or loss. The regs include specific examples, such as when there's a general successor transaction, for example, when CFC stock is sold to an unrelated person. Another specific example in the reg is when there's a 338G election. And other than a few limited transactions, such as, you know, reorgs or repats, there you wouldn't recognize 96C gain or loss on any other transactions. And, you know, for those of you who have dealt with changing functional currencies of your CFCs, you know that under current law, you recognize 96C gain or loss when a CFC changes their currency to the dollar. But consistent with this principle and this concept of not recognizing it until the PTEP returns to the U.S., there's a proposal to eliminate that adjustment when you make the functional currency change. And so when a CFC would go to the dollar, you would no longer recognize 96C gain or loss. And then being the currency geek that I am, I was very excited by a reference to the DATSIM rules because they are considering making a consistent adjustment to those rules so that it eliminates the 96C gain loss within the DATSIM transition as well.
Well, Gloria, everyone gets excited about DATSIM. thanks for that, Gloria. This is obviously a complex area of the law. As we wrap up this episode, Kristen, any final thoughts?
Yeah. So, Gary, I think a couple things that our listeners should keep in mind. So the first, I think you mentioned this at the beginning, is this is just the first tranche of PTEP regs. The government has indicated that they're going to issue an additional package of regs to cover, for example, M&A issues and transactional issues. They've also indicated that they're not going to issue that until they finalize these regs. I think our listeners should also keep in mind that these are just proposed. We have a new administration that's come in, and so it's kind of to be determined what will happen with this reg package and where they'll ultimately land.
Thanks, Kristen, and thanks also, Gloria and Tim, for your insights on these proposed PTEP regs. And a special thanks to Matthew O'Neill for his help behind the scenes with this episode. Hopefully we won't have to wait as long for these regs to be finalized and for the second tranche to be proposed as we did for these regs. But if and when they are finalized, we will almost certainly revisit this topic. In the meantime, please stay tuned for future episodes of KPMG's Inside International Tax to stay up to speed on the latest developments in U.S. international tax. Till our next episode, take care. We'll be right back.